All right, we will be in our next matter, docket number 85844. Mr. Rheinmiller, on behalf of the petitioners, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay, thank you. And you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. Nathan Rheinmiller on behalf of Sunrise and Nurse Cord Olson. This case isn't just about a privilege in a vacuum. This is about a privilege that potentially affects the health care available for Nevadans and potentially health care for patients across the United States. Congress realized that some of the errors that were being made in hospitals needed to be addressed on a national level. And as a result, they determined that they would develop this program, which eventually became the PSQIA, the Patient Safety and Quality Improvement Act, where hospitals could report these potentially preventable errors, and there could be an analysis and an aggregation of this information so that processes could be developed to avoid these in the future. They realized that to do this, they had to make sure that whatever the hospital was presenting would be cloaked in a privilege so that the hospital didn't feel like they were creating a record or an investigation that was then just going to be used against them in any later civil litigation. So they created this very broad privilege that they included into the creation of the PSQIA, which is much broader than any of the other privileges really had been previously. And on the bright side, a study showed that, in fact, this program worked. Over a three-year period, over 20,000 lives were saved and over $7 billion in healthcare expenses. So the program works, and it's important for this reason to keep that in mind, that really, the courts are responsible for making sure that this privilege is enforced so that the voluntary participation continues. So while the stakes are fairly high, the legal issues presented by this appeal are fairly simple. One, the court's order in this case was all based on a misunderstanding or misreading of the PSQIA, which is patent in just simply looking at the language of the statute. Second, plaintiff didn't even address that erroneous interpretation, confessing error. Third, looking at the actual terms of the privilege, it's very clear that the privilege is broad and it isn't waived upon disclosure, whether permissible or impermissible. The state statutes don't require any different result. First of all, because if they do provide less protection for the patient safety work product, they're preempted. The language of the statute is very clear. And more importantly, even under the state statutes, it's required to have a written waiver, and which avoids this sort of argument that someone waived it involuntarily or accidentally. And third, the exception that is being argued for by plaintiff, this sort of needs-based exception, isn't in the statutes. And in fact, the legislature listed the exceptions when they wanted to. So under Cannarelli, we don't read in any extra exceptions that aren't already in there. Third, the court, in issuing its order, found subject matter waiver. That's inapplicable here because that's meant to address prejudice. There was none, especially because the evidence is inadmissible. And two, the waiver wasn't narrow enough to address any of the issues that might actually be there. Finally, and I think we're going to probably talk about this, the original order had no proportionality analysis at all. The supplemental order attempted to remedy that, but didn't fix some of the glaring omissions.
And let me ask you while we're here, and Mr. Prince, you all can address it as well. The best that I can tell, particularly from you all's supplemental brief, since nowhere in there is there any mention of it, I'm assuming that the district court didn't put it on calendar, didn't give you notice, didn't have a hearing or ask you all to weigh in any further. Just the district court just issued this supplemental order and then apparently told you all about it, and then it got filed. And I don't have a problem with it being filed with us, but it just didn't appear that there was any notice ahead of time or input from you all on the supplemental order.
At least from the petitioner's side, the first notice was the service of the order.
Okay.
There was no indication.
Did the court make any express findings about whether or not the information being sought was actually like fell under the ambit of the patient safety work product? Was there an express finding to that one way or the other?
Yes. In the original order, now I guess we're dealing with three orders. Mm-hmm. In the original order, the court specifically found that the questions that plaintiff was seeking to compel Mr. or Dr. Murawski to answer went specifically to the deliberations of the patient safety committee, because it was asking, what did you look at? Why did you look at it? Why did you select this? And so she found that in the very first order, and then went on to discuss why she needed additional information on whether or not it could be waived, because she thought some of these types of questions had been answered by other witnesses. So that was found. Any other questions on the supplemental order?
Not at this time.
So, okay. So going back to the PSQIA, the court's reading was erroneous. She read the portion, I mean, reading the entire statute, it's very clear that Congress meant to say, here's a privilege, it's ironclad, and here's where it's not. They specifically define how the privilege can be affected and in which circumstances. If that wasn't clear enough, they went on and added 3.208, which said, this privilege, whether disclosed permissibly or whether disclosed impermissibly, remains privileged and confidential. So they drove the point home. They made what was implicit explicit. When the court read this statute, she created a third category of voluntary. So Congress had permissible, impermissible, she adds voluntary. What she misses is the voluntary falls into one of these two buckets. It's either a permissible disclosure, which is those defined by the statute, or it's impermissible because it wasn't a disclosure provided for by the statute. Either way, the privilege continues. And so the negative implication canon doesn't really apply to this. I think it's telling that plaintiff's brief didn't respond to this issue at all. Acknowledge that whether it was correct or incorrect. Instead, they offered up the court a different portion of the statute under the definitions. And the interpretation of that section nullified the entire privilege. In addition to being an incorrect interpretation, what it is the portion that explains what is patient safety work product. So subparagraph A explains this is what patient safety work product is. Subparagraph B explains specifically what is not patient safety work product. That section continues on with the clarification explaining nothing in the PSQIA is meant to eliminate or hamper discovery or admissibility of anything defined under this subparagraph B, which is not patient safety work product. So that leaves the interpretation and the question of whether or not there can be a waiver under the PSQIA completely unanswered before this court, other than the information that's been provided by the petitioner. In reading the express language of the statute itself, it's very clear that the statute provides a privilege that precludes discovery, court orders mandating any sort of disclosure, or admissibility of the evidence that falls under the PSQIA. In this case, there's been no showing that we fall under one of the descriptions where the privilege is diminished or eliminated. And all arguments have been that this was an impermissible disclosure, which, pursuant to the statute, clearly remains privileged.
I want to go back to the question that Justice Lee asked.
That's okay.
And it may be hyper-technical, but my reading of the original court's order was that the questions posed were addressed towards peer review committee. I didn't read it as her saying this qualifies for patient safety work product, which I believe is a PQSIA terminology as opposed to state statute terminology. So when Justice Lee was asking whether she made a determination as to whether it qualified, and I thought you said patient safety work product.
Correct.
I want to be specific. Did she ever make a determination about patient safety work product being the nature of the sought after disclosures, as opposed to saying it was peer review committee, which would be a state statute analysis?
She didn't make an express determination that it There is nowhere in any of the orders where she addresses what is PSQIA privileged or not. The only thing she references, there's a discussion of the PSQIA. She makes her finding that these, in fact, constitute deliberations and therefore aren't discoverable. And we can talk about why deliberations are protected under the PSQIA, but she then goes on to, in the analysis where she determines that it can be waived, implicitly assumes that it was privileged. You can't have a waiver of a privilege unless the privilege applies.
Right.
And so implicitly it's found that it falls under the PSQIA, but expressly there is nothing in that order that says it. It simply identifies deliberations. And the definition of patient safety work product is any data, information, reports that would disclose any deliberations of the patient safety committee. And so by definition, by her indicating it's a deliberation, it falls under that privilege.
Okay.
But no, that is something that wasn't found specifically, but it was implicitly and by her definition.
Okay.
So going back to the PSQIA, with that privilege applying and not being able to be waived, it means a couple things. It means this order is facially invalid because the PSWP isn't subject to a court order and not available for discovery. It also precludes any sort of additional reading into it of a waiver for where there's a needs base, like is being argued by plaintiff because the documents aren't available elsewhere. And specifically, the Congress put into the statute a waiver for privilege where there was a needs base, but it was limited to criminal. And so they knew how to do it, but they specifically didn't do it for civil actions. So under the negative implication canon, we don't read it in, and under Cantarella. Same thing goes for a spoliation remedy. It seems like there's an argument. First of all, the record wasn't factually developed below, which is why the trial court said, don't include that in the order because it's simply not before me. And more importantly, there's nothing in the statute that would allow a waiver of the privilege as a sanction remedy. The court has every evidentiary remedy they want, but they can't waive the privilege. The state privileges are the same thing. Again, the language of the statute is very clear. It says, notwithstanding any state, federal, or local law, this material is privileged and confidential. So if any of the state statutes has been argued by plaintiff and found by the court provide less coverage, then they're preempted. Secondarily, the state privileges that we're talking about, NRS 49265 and NRS 449119, I think it's important to look at the legislative history, and it was clear that the legislature was taking the exact same subject matter that was covered by 49265 and creating and broadening the privilege and inadmissibility with 119. 119 requires a writing to waive it. Therefore, there's been no argument that there's a written waiver here. State doesn't apply. And for the same reasons, we can't read in a needs-based exception because, again, the legislature listed out when the exceptions were there, and they listed how it can be waived.
Counsel, there's admittedly a dearth of case law on the applicability of the PSQIA, at least as opposing counsel would have us read it. But they did cite to one case, the Creasy case. It's a Virginia case. Can you talk a little bit about that and distinguishing that case from what we have here? And this is where the court found that the defendant hospital waived the PSQIA privilege because it failed to properly disclose the documents it claimed as privilege and failed to meet the standards required in its privilege log.
Absolutely. And I think this goes back to the issue I was talking about with waiving the privilege as a remedy for spoliation. It simply isn't available under the PSQIA. And really what this is it wasn't the court determining that this wasn't privileged. They were punishing the litigant for not following the rules of civil procedure. And this simply isn't provided for under the PSQIA. It's just not one of the arrows in the quiver of the court to deal with people that don't follow discovery rules. They can do anything else, strike answers, find adverse evidentiary things, but they cannot waive the privilege.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Justice Herndon, if it pleases the court, Dennis Prince and Kevin Strong on behalf of respondent Tiffany Grace. Privileges by design must be asserted to be entitled to protection. There must be some sort of affirmative valence by the party who is a privilege holder seeking to protect information from either being disclosed voluntarily or involuntarily. Any privilege, whether under state law or arising under federal law, would be meaningless without a timely objection. And there's a substantive way to waive a privilege, and there's also a procedural way. And in this particular case, Sunrise made the determination, as numerous witnesses testified over the course of this complex litigation regarding a catastrophic injury to an infant, allowing people to testify regarding interviews with the chief medical officer, who was the head of the safety committee, who allowed a discussion regarding what the findings were of the committee, and sharing the etiology and final diagnosis or working diagnosis of what caused this infant's brain damage. And the point of the waiver is to prevent this sword and shield argument that Sunrise is now making. And the suggestion by Sunrise is, well, it can never be a shield because no matter what, even if it was disclosed, it's otherwise inadmissible. That's not how privileges work. This case is more closely aligned with this court's determination in Valley Health. For example, in Valley Health, they were seeking documents and records relating to other sexual assaults or other incidents at Valley Health hospitals here in Clark County. And they failed to timely object on the basis of a privilege, the state peer review privilege. Although interestingly, they could have used the PSQIA and they didn't make that argument. That wasn't addressed in the Valley Health case, even though that was decided in 2011 and the PSQIA was passed in 2005. So, and this court determined, well, since you didn't object timely, you've waived that argument with respect to the privilege. The privilege is parallel both under state and federal law. The goal of the Nevada peer review statute is to promote quality health care. Some of the language of the legislative history, including the comments made by then State Senator Reed regarding, hey, there needs to be a forum and an environment where physicians and other healthcare providers can discuss care to promote the improvement of the quality of healthcare for our residents. That is a great goal. So the goal of the state peer review statute as well as PSQI are the same. They function the same. They have the same protections. However, if you don't timely object during depositions, under Rule 26, if you don't timely object under privilege and assert a privilege law, those are waived. Moreover, under Rule 30, relating to depositions, if a matter becomes privileged, that is the only basis upon which you can instruct a witness not to answer. But in addition, there is a procedural mechanism in a deposition. You can suspend and seek a protective order. Look at what we did in this case.
But they're arguing that if the privilege applies, it's absolute, it can't be waived.
They can't point to any language in the PSQI that says it's absolute.
Isn't that what the language says?
No.
And
it says it's confidential, and it says it's privileged.
And it says that even if it's impermissibly disclosed, it shall continue to be privileged and confidential.
Correct. And the point is, there is a form of permissible disclosure. As the privilege holder, Sunrise can make the determination, we're going to allow the disclosure or not the disclosure. It's their privilege to assert and enforce. We're not talking about a third-person privilege. They are the principal defendant in this case along with their nurse. But as it relates to the privilege, it is Sunrise. It's their privilege to hold. And I can give you an example or give a question.
Well, no, as Judge Lee just indicated, the language is even if it's disclosed, it's not waived. How do you address that?
I'm going to address it. I'm going to use a hypothetical to do it. So let's just.
And then some legal authority to back up your position.
I'm going to. I think the context of what is considered impermissible is the following. Let's assume that a surgeon made an error at a hospital. And that error was reported to the safety committee. And the surgeon, in turn, gets sued. The hospital is not a party. And the surgeon and other witnesses may have testified that they were interviewed by members of the safety committee. They may have disclosed information, what the findings were, what the outcome was, because the surgeon may have been the subject of that, that would be an impermissible disclosure by a third party who is not the holder of the privilege. Here, it is Sunrise who is the holder of the privilege. They have the obligation to assert the privilege timely. In my hypothetical, they're not a party to the case. They can't control what somebody else says or doesn't say. That's what I think the point of Congress was that would be an impermissible form of disclosure. And I think Judge Gall was reading the language that, therefore, if there's an impermissible disclosure, there is a permissible disclosure. And it's not just only two items, which is they're relying solely on, they're not, it's not the statute, it's really a regulation adopted by the Department of Health and Human Services, 3.208. But as the privilege holder, they can permit the disclosure or fail to protect their interests by way of not timely objecting. Then they don't gain any greater rights. If the court looks at the guidance provided by the Department of Health and Human Services, it's an extremely limited privilege. The same way this court has construed 49.265, that's a very narrow privilege. It's not designed to give them any further rights that they would not otherwise have under state law. It's to provide a system of confidentiality because the states may not have as developed patient safety committee standards as we do in the state of Nevada. Nevada has the 49.385. The state adopted legislation mandating that they have safety committee and those proceedings, including discovery, are privileged.
Can I ask you just two quick questions, Mr. Prince? Okay, so I'm still stuck on this 42 CFR 3.208A.
Yep.
To me, that seems to say that whether or not the information was permissibly or impermissibly disclosed, that it shall continue to be privileged and confidential. And let's assume for a second that my reading of this is correct. And to the extent that that conflicts then with the state peer review standards, wouldn't we have to apply the PSQIA because of the preemption or supremacy?
I guess to the extent that you found conflict, yes, but only to the extent you found conflict. And I feel that Nevada, we have obviously, 49.385 allows a voluntary disclosure to constitute a waiver of the Chapter 49 privileges. We need to talk, potentially Diaz left an open question about the application of 49.385, the voluntary disclosure, and the peer review statute, 265. But you're right, the Virginia court.
Why would you say it only applies if we found conflict? Why wouldn't it be express preemption?
Because I don't think it's an express preemption. I don't think there's an intention or expression by Congress that they intended to preempt.
Notwithstanding any other federal, state, local, or tribal law.
I think that's part of it, but then they give further guidance on what is protected, what isn't protected, the guidance, the clarification within the statute. I think that language could potentially be preemption, but I don't think it's preemption in this case, given the expansiveness of Nevada's peer review standards. It really, whether it be the federal standard or the state standard, we're really talking about the formal proceedings and the internal documents created by the committee that's entitled to protection. Whether the definitional aspects of both the federal and the state legislation try to accomplish the same goals. And I think what Judge Gall found, I think how the statute is read is, you can have a permissible form of disclosure by the privilege holder. It's their job to protect their privilege. If they choose not to assert it, then they waive it. That's consistent with every other privilege holder's right. And moreover, they can't point to any language that this is an absolute privilege under all circumstances. Their argument is, well, we can waive it. We can allow these people to testify. And no matter what, it's inadmissible anyway. I don't think that's what Congress intended. I don't think that's in a way to abuse this. For example, why would that be inappropriate? Because you could see a scenario whereby the review committee and their findings may actually help the hospital, right? And then they're saying, well, we allow the disclosure, and then we're going to now use that as evidence to support our position at a trial.
Well, but the PSQIA doesn't place a party in any position better than anybody else. It just makes it arguably unwaivable and therefore not usable in civil proceedings. It's not like they could use it if they wanted to your detriment.
I think they could. They could say, we're the privilege holder. We elected not to assert the privilege. Therefore, we're not claiming the privilege. For example, an insurance bad faith case, sometimes they rely on the advice of counsel. They'll waive the attorney-client privilege and say, oh, our decision-making was in part predicated upon the advice of our lawyers, which is a conscious waiver.
I don't think Congress has come in and weighed in on attorney-client privilege waivability like we have here. But I'm just saying, if you read the plain language of the federal statutes at issue, they couldn't use it any more than you could use it. And you would have the same right to object to them using it that they have to object to you trying to use it, assuming it was somehow disclosed.
I guess with the voluntary disclosure, which would be a permitted disclosure by the privilege holder, as opposed to someone else who may have had information or party to a case, I don't feel that's right. I feel that we chose to waive the privilege. Now, that was their litigation course of conduct. One of the questions you asked earlier was, did Judge Gall decide what was considered patient safety work product? And she didn't discuss that. And I don't think you can go just because she says, well, it's a permissible disclosure, therefore it must have been within the privilege. I don't think she went that far. Because, for example, one of the things that Judge Gall did was said that any documents, data, or information that the committee obtained from other areas of the hospital, that would be considered privilege under the state peer review. And legally, that's not accurate. And since this is part of a writ of prohibition, the standard is a de novo review, and we have the right ability to review that, and even under a plain error standard. Because the language and under the statutory scheme for the PSQIA is any, and that's in the clarifying language, that any documents that existed separately and apart from the patient safety evaluation system aren't privileged. And that's consistent with Nevada law. That's where I'm saying Nevada parallels the protections under the federal law. This court has determined both in the Columbia HCA case and Valley that documents that exist outside of the peer review context, those are not privileged. And the mere fact that you supply them or provide them to the committee doesn't invoke a privilege. And so
if I understand, I mean, you're opining that to the extent the PSQIA would have applied and is not waivable, then the court has not yet reached the idea of whether there are things that Dr. Murawski could testify to that are not patient safety work products.
That's correct. There is a significant loss and or destruction of evidence in this case by Sunrise. For example, the young man was connected to a medication pump, and he was in the middle of an intravenous line change when this event happened. The question was, had they started delivery of the medication? There's a medication record that suggests that, yes, he was receiving medication. Well, we don't have the data from the pump. And one of the questions to Dr. Murawski was, did you get the data from the pump? Because the hospital is saying they don't have it, but do you have it? That would be data that exists outside of the patient safety evaluation system as well as the committee. Similarly, if there's documents or records or statements that existed outside of the committee, that wouldn't be entitled to protection either under the PSQIA or the Nevada peer review standard.
But that determination hasn't been specifically made by the district court yet.
She, in her original, her October 2022 order, she does state that. And with respect to Judge Gall, that we disagree with that. We weren't technically aggrieved by the order because she allowed the discovery of all the material, including the deliberative process and the final conclusions reached. But that would be, in our opinion, she got to the right result potentially for the wrong reason, because she would need to have a deeper dive into what exactly would exist under outside of the peer review committee or the patient safety committee, and what we were seeking information from. There's also a photograph taken by one of the medical professionals showing this condition of modeling, and which was critical to establishing the diagnosis of a fat embolism caused by a line management problem. So that would be a situation where that existed outside of the committee, and we would need that. In addition, there are notes that were created by Nurse Boyle of the interview of the individual nurse, Court Olson, that have now been lost and or destroyed, that she interviewed him close in time, what his events were, what his observations were, and what happened the night of February 27th, 2018.
Mr. Prince, can I just ask you a quick question as your time is coming down here? Were there any other parts of this litigation where Sunrise has attempted to use the information it's now seeking to exclude for their benefit and to your client's detriment?
Not yet.
Okay.
To my knowledge. I mean, when you allow detailed questions of the medical director, Patricia Ramsey, about conversation with Dr. Morosky. What was the, there, she, because Dr. Ramsey was talking about a medical staff investigation, meaning, hey, at the patient level, like, we need to find out what happened so to make sure this doesn't happen again to poor Elijah Grace. And she's also talking about a hospital investigation. That's Dr. Morosky's role. And when Dr. Morosky was having a discussion with her, he told her, according to her under oath testimony, that we determined it was a fat embolism event caused by a line management problem created by the nurse. That's the ultimate conclusion. That's the ultimate etiology. And that was without objection. There was no effort to lodge an objection, instruct not to answer on a privilege, file, suspend the deposition, and file a motion for protective order. And that goes right to Creasy, the Virginia case. Mm-hmm. You didn't properly protect your privilege. And that's why I said there's a procedural component to this. Is how do you...
Just assuming that, though, takes out of the equation whether they viewed something as patient safety work product or not. I mean, I'm going to assume they're going to object to things that they believe are patient safety work product and therefore undiscoverable under the PSQIA, whereas there may be other things that they're like, we don't feel in our mind that that's patient safety work product, so we're going to let you ask those questions. But it kind of gets back to what I was asking you about a moment ago. It doesn't appear that the court has yet weighed in on trying to address those things.
I think maybe not entirely as to all topics, that's true. But when Dr. Morosky's sole role was on behalf of the patient safety committee, obviously Mr. Prangle, the counsel for Sunrise, knew that. And so when Dr. Ramsey is testifying about what Dr. Morosky's saying as to what his findings were as following his investigation, that is directly on behalf of the safety committee and no one else, because he's not at the patient level. It's only done on behalf of the hospital itself as the entity entitled to as trying to assert this now protection. I think you've got some very untoward results when people, sophisticated litigants like the hospital, who has a broad grant of privilege both under state and federal law, they don't timely assert those privileges. That's a waiver, both under Rule 26, because if you don't assert your documents or privilege, that's a procedural waiver. This court, in dealing with the same exact issue about the sensitivity, if I may finish my thought,
sure.
In Valley Health, there was the same argument by Valley. If this information gets out, it's going to be devastating, it's irretrievable. Well, the court determined that, well, you didn't make the argument in front of the discovery commissioner asserting the privilege, therefore it's waived. And then you went on to talk about, hey, even though it's we're determining it's procedurally waived, suddenly it wouldn't apply anyway. And for those reasons, Your Honor, we think that the court's order should stand, and in addition, potentially even clarified that any documents or record outside of the patient safety committee are not privileged.
Thank you, counsel.
Can you address his very last statement?
Which one?
About the
it was kind of wrapped
outside
up.
Not being privileged.
Absolutely. That was the first thing I wanted to address. This is a false issue. We've never, Sunrise agrees that antecedent medical records do not become privileged simply because they're considered. What's privileged is the fact that they were considered. And this is what we're fighting about. The entire argument about lost evidence.
So you would, and I apologize for interrupting, but you would agree with Mr. Prince that there could be things that the patient safety that fall within the PSQIA that still would be discoverable.
I agree
that
the
patient. That's a very simplistic way of wording it, but it goes to the point of, did the district court go with any specificity to try and address things to see if their patient safety work product or not? Or whether they're, as you may reference, maybe the medical records that happened to be with that committee and utilized in some fashion, but the records themselves will be discoverable.
Correct. I hesitate because we're kind of mixing some concepts, but anything that existed outside is not privileged. Right. Whether the PSC takes it in or not, it exists. It's similar to what the court was alluding to when there was the discussion with Dr. Ramsey, and she, according to Mr. Prince, disclosed what Dr. Morosky is, the head of the PSC, his final conclusion. That's an issue of fact, and it's actually not correct. Dr. Ramsey testified that was her working differential diagnosis. If that's true, that's not privileged, even if it was told to us. It can't be. And a privilege that suddenly cloaked everything with privilege once the patient safety committee took it wouldn't work. And Congress was very clear that that is not what this was meant to do. Now, do you get to ask, did the Patient Safety Committee have this document? Absolutely not. And I think this goes directly to the issue when we're talking about lost evidence. Mr. Prince has every ability to use normal discovery to find out, does Sunrise have X, Y, or Z? None of it requires going into the peer review privilege because there is no privilege being asserted for documents that exist outside of the deliberations of the committee. I can't stress that enough because we're really fighting over a false issue.
But what about necessity? So, for instance, Mr. Prince mentioned some records that the hospital should have had, but they don't have it, and the peer review committee has it. Would that be subject to discovery, or because it's need-based, nobody else has these documents?
There is no need-based exception, but the hypothetical fails because there wouldn't be the document just in the patient safety committee, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and can I ask one more just quick question? Sure. So what about this notion of using this privilege as a sword and a shield? I mean, would you agree that Sunrise could not then go back and try to use the information that it's trying to preclude the plaintiff from getting later on to its advantage and in detriment of the plaintiff?
I agree entirely. And that's the difference with this privilege that Congress gave is for the first time you have a privilege that even if you disclose it, the privilege is still attached to it. Like, for example, in Ashokan, whoever had the documents, including the medical board, couldn't use them if this privilege applied. And so it attaches, and Congress basically took away the ability of the privilege holder to say, you know what, we don't want the privilege. The only way to diminish the privilege is through the statute and is very specific.
Thank you, Council.
All right, gentlemen, thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Terrific briefing and argument as usual from you all. I take the matter, we'll take it under advisement, and we're going to take a short recess before we get started.